There's a really fascinating phenomenon in human anatomy called the physiological blind spot.
Oh, right, with the optic nerve.
Exactly. Every single human eye has this tiny patch on the retina where the optic nerve passes through. And because of how the eye is wired, there are absolutely no light-detecting cells there.
None at all.
Yeah, so you're technically completely blind in that tiny sliver of your vision. But, you never actually notice it. Because your brain just sort of invents the missing details based on the surrounding context.
It's like a real-time reality editor. I mean, the visual cortex prioritizes a seamless, comfortable illusion over the raw, fragmented data.
Right. It quietly paints over the void to protect you from the unsettling reality that your vision is incomplete.
And while that keeps us from, tripping over our own feet all day, it becomes a massive liability when that exact same mechanism applies to our psychology.
Which brings us perfectly to the core of what we're doing today. Because when you step into the world of human behavior, specifically our relationship with authority, autonomy, and control, we have these massive cognitive blind spots.
Oh, absolutely.
We make irrational decisions, we surrender our agency, and our brains just quietly paint over the gaps to protect our egos. So, welcome back to today's deep dive into week 5, day 6 of the Laws of Life workbook.
Yeah, we're focusing on Law 5 today.
Right, which deals with the inevitable abuse and incompetence of power granted to the state. And today, we are going to force you to look directly at those gaps.
And I should probably note right off the bat that this primer is going to be a bit longer than our typical deep dives.
Yeah, fair warning.
It's just the sheer complexity of Law 5 demands it. You are being forced to do significantly more internal cognitive work and honestly, neural rewiring today than you might expect.
We are definitely moving past simple behavioral tweaks here.
We are. We're actually deconstructing how you process fear, how you interact with authority, and how you justify surrendering your own autonomy.
So, putting on my psychology professor hat for a second, that level of deconstruction requires an absolute non-negotiable commitment to total honesty.
Yeah, that's crucial.
As you walk through today's self-audit, you have to remember that no one else is ever going to see these answers. They're yours alone.
Just between you and the workbook.
Right. So, if you catch yourself hedging or maybe trying to frame your answers to make yourself look a little more noble, you have to stop.
I mean, the urge to hedge is completely biological. When you encounter a truth about yourself that conflicts with your idealized self-image, like, say, realizing you gave up your privacy just because it was easy,
Which happens constantly.
right, your brain triggers a stress response. Hedging is just your psychological escape hatch, but taking that escape hatch completely sabotages the hard neurological rewiring you've done this week.
Because you're feeding it bad data.
Exactly. To build new resilient neural pathways, you have to feed the brain raw, unedited data.
Okay, before we get into the mechanics of actually auditing that data, I think we need to address something we touched on yesterday.
The political elephant in the room.
Yes, the elephant. Coming into week 5, I will admit I was highly skeptical about the material. Because anytime you see a law focusing on state power and its abuse, it is incredibly difficult to believe the text is truly non-political.
Sure.
Just feels like a setup for a partisan lecture, you know?
Well, it's hard not to view it through that lens, given the current cultural climate. Almost every discussion about authority gets dragged into this us versus them binary.
But the work you did yesterday, and especially the self-audit you're doing today, it completely dismantled my skepticism.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this material is not about taking sides, regardless of whether you lean left or right. Fundamentally, this law is a masterclass in critical thinking.
It really is.
It trains you to refuse those manufactured binary choices. It forces you to find alternative options. It's really about learning to mentally design around the restrictions in your life, no matter the source of those restrictions.
And by framing laws and regulations simply as design restrictions, the workbook does something clever. It neutralizes the emotional charge.
Right.
If you view a restriction as a political outrage, your amygdala, your brain's threat center, just fires right up. Critical thinking shuts down. You're just angry.
You're in fight or flight.
Exactly. But if you view it as a neutral design restriction, your prefrontal cortex stays online. You shift from a state of helpless frustration into a state of creative problem solving.
And that shift is exactly what today's work is all about. You are auditing your subconscious focus to see where your critical thinking is still, leaking.
So where do we start?
Well, the first thing you need to examine is where your mind drifts when you aren't actively steering it. The workbook specifically asks you to look back at the bedtime question you've been seeding all week.
Oh, right. Question one.
Yes. identifying which restriction, authority, or rule your mind kept returning to.
You know, seeding that question right before sleep is such a brilliant exploitation of how the brain naturally processes information.
Because of the different sleep states.
Yeah, exactly. As you transition from wakefulness to sleep, your brain waves slow down. You move from the high-frequency beta waves of active thought down into the relaxed alpha state and finally into the drowsy theta state.
And that's when the guard comes down.
Right. As that happens, your conscious critical faculties, the parts of you that worry about your inbox or your social standing, they power down.
But your brain isn't turning off. It's just shifting gears, right?
Precisely. Your default mode network comes online. Think of it as the brain's background processing system. During sleep, particularly REM and deep sleep, your hippocampus is rapidly communicating with your cortex.
Consolidating memories.
Consolidating memories, searching for patterns, all of it. By seeding a specific question as you fall asleep, you completely bypass the conscious security guards. You give that background processor a target to work on without the interference of your waking biases.
So if your mind kept returning to one specific restriction this week, it wasn't just a random coincidence.
Not at all.
Your default mode network flagged it as the major source of cognitive friction in your life. It is the thing your brain is desperately trying to resolve.
And, well, that leads to a much more uncomfortable realization.
Right. Question two.
Yeah. Once you identify the restriction, you have to look at why you tolerate it. The audit asks you to examine what this week revealed about how you respond when power is presented as the solution to fear, safety, or convenience.
You know what? I actually want to put this into practice right now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. My neuroscientist friend, let's have some fun. I want to know where your blind spot is.
Okay, hit me.
As someone who literally studies the mechanisms of cognitive manipulation, how do you answer question two? Where do you willingly hand over the keys to your autonomy?
Oh, that is a brutal question.
Hey, the total honesty rule is in effect.
I know. Well, okay. My radar for fear or crisis manipulation is pretty highly tuned. Where I fail completely, though, is convenience.
Really?
Specifically digital convenience. Look, I know exactly how predictive algorithms harvest behavioral data. I understand the long-term implications of building psychological profiles to influence consumer behavior.
What?
But at the end of a grueling day in the lab, when a food delivery app demands location tracking, access to my contacts, and microphone permissions just to get my dinner here 10 minutes faster.
Let me guess.
I click allow.
You knowingly step into the trap.
I do, every time. My brain calculates the immediate tangible dopamine reward of an easy dinner, and it weighs it against the abstract long-term threat of data harvesting. The immediate dopamine hit wins.
That's fascinating.
It just proves that understanding the mechanics of a psychological trap doesn't make you immune to the allure of an easy solution.
Wow. Yeah, that trade-off for convenience is a massive energy leak. We willingly walk right into the cage as long as there's a comfortable couch inside.
That's exactly it.
But then we spend all our time complaining about the bars. And the workbook pushes you to confront this with question three. By asking where in your life you are wasting energy wishing a restriction would disappear instead of designing around it.
Which is so common. Wishing reality were different is actually one of the most metabolically expensive things the brain can do.
Oh, for sure. In psychology, we talk about this in terms of locus of control. Wishing a restriction would vanish is an external locus of control. You're just waiting for the world to change so you can be comfortable.
It's exhausting.
It's like a rat in a cage.
Yeah.
You can spend all your energy chewing on the thick steel bars. You will break your teeth, you will exhaust yourself, and you will accomplish absolutely nothing.
Nothing at all.
Or you can stop, step back, and start exploring the boundaries of the cage to find the open latch.
Biologically, chewing on those steel bars, that state of chronic, futile anger, it triggers a continuous stress response. You are literally bathing your brain in cortisol.
Which shuts down the prefrontal cortex again.
Right. But the moment you accept the restriction and shift your focus to finding the latch to creative design, you trigger the release of dopamine. You actually reward the brain for seeking solutions. It completely alters your neurochemistry.
But to find that latch, you need a method to evaluate the cage itself. You can't just flail around.
Right.
That is where the power filter comes in, which is question four in the audit. Just to quickly review, that acronym stands for purpose, opportunity for abuse, worst case outcome, enforcement reality, and reversibility.
It's a great tool.
It's designed to force you to slow down and think critically instead of reacting emotionally to a new rule or restriction.
Well, let me turn the tables here then.
Oh, here we go.
Yes, Professor, your turn on the spot. In academia, you spend your life building and analyzing complex models. Which part of that power filter trips you up? Where do you have to stop and check your own academic ego?
That's fair. It's definitely worst case outcome and reversibility.
Really? Why those two?
Well, in the academic world, we operate largely in theoretical environments. We design systems that are logically sound. We sort of just assume that if a system is well designed, rational people will operate it rationally.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah. So when a new policy is introduced in the real world, my default is to evaluate how it's supposed to function in a perfect scenario. I have to actively force myself to look at the worst case outcome because my academic ego just whispers, well, educated professionals wouldn't let it go that far.
You're assuming rationality in a system that is inevitably run by irrational actors.
Yes. And I continually have to remind myself that institutions aren't run by perfect algorithms.
Yeah.
They're run by flawed, emotional, heavily biased humans.
Very true.
Assuming reversibility, assuming we can just undo a bad policy if it doesn't work, is a massive theoretical blind spot for me.
You know, that assumption of rationality is a perfect bridge into the deepest, most uncomfortable layer of today's audit.
Question five.
Yeah. We desperately want to believe we are rational, logic-driven creatures. But the workbook cuts through that illusion by asking you to identify the specific fear or group of fears that most erodes your critical thinking.
Even outside the context of state power.
Exactly, even when it has nothing to do with institutions.
This is where we really have to confront our evolutionary wiring. We are not naturally rational beings. We're rationalizing beings.
I like that distinction.
We make a decision based on emotion or fear, and then our prefrontal cortex just scrambles to invent a logical justification for it after the fact.
That is the amygdala hijack in action. When a core fear is triggered, the amygdala essentially overrides the prefrontal cortex. The logic center of your brain just goes dark.
You literally can't think straight.
You don't have the biological capacity to think critically about a perceived threat to your survival in that moment.
And the trick is recognizing that survival in our modern environment rarely means outrunning a predator.
Right.
It means social and economic survival. The fear of losing your job, the fear of social ostracization, the fear of being publicly shamed. These are the modern
The
predators.
stakes feel just as high.
They do. Because if you look at human history, being exiled from the hunter-gatherer tribe meant certain death. You could not survive alone. So our nervous systems evolved to treat social rejection with the exact same physiological panic as a physical attack.
It's true. In fact, neuroimaging shows that social rejection activates the anterior cingulate cortex, which is the exact same neural pathway that processes physical pain.
Wow.
It literally hurts to be ostracized, which is why identifying with your specific fear trigger is the only way to protect yourself from manipulation.
Because if they know your trigger.
If a politician, an advertiser, or an institution can poke that specific fear, whether it's the fear of financial ruin or being seen as an outcast, they own your cognitive processing.
Which makes identifying it in question five so critical. By naming that fear today, you are dragging it out of the subconscious amygdala and placing it under the harsh light of the conscious prefrontal cortex.
You're taking the weapon away from anyone who might use it against you.
And when you clear that ambient fear, you free up the cognitive bandwidth for your subconscious to actually start solving problems.
Which brings us to the final part of the audit, question six, harvesting those solutions.
Right.
The workbook asks what answers, dreams, ideas, or unexpected thoughts surfaced this week after seeding the bedtime question.
These are the gold nuggets the material talks about,
Yes.
right?
Because you've been seeding the bedtime question and reviewing your codes and distill points all week, you have signaled to your brain that this information is highly salient.
So it gets to work.
Exactly. Your brain responds by building new synaptic connections in the background. It searches through its semantic networks while you sleep. That is why you might have had a bizarre metaphorical dream or a sudden flash of insight while you were just making coffee.
And the crucial step the workbook emphasizes here is documenting those insights. Even if a thought or a fragment of a dream doesn't fully make logical sense right now, you have to write it down.
Documenting it is a biological imperative at this stage. By writing it down, you close the loop. You validate the brain's background processing, which encourages it to do even more of it.
Give it positive reinforcement.
Right. If you ignore those insights, the brain eventually stops prioritizing that background work. It assumes it's not important anymore.
Okay, so you have a lot of work to do today. You need to audit your blind spots, Confront where you trade power for convenience, identify the evolutionary fears that hijack your logic, and harvest the gold nuggets your subconscious has surfaced.
It's a heavy lift.
It is. But remember, this deep dive is just the primer. The real progress happens when you sit down with a workbook.
Yeah, just listening to us unpack the concepts won't solidify the neural pathways. You have to actually perform the audit.
And beyond the audit, you must maintain the daily practice. Do not skip your 3 times a day review of the stack you've built.
The 3 code rewrites?
Yes. 3 code rewrites, 3 distill points, and 2 quotes. Morning, midday, and evening.
That repetition is utilizing Hebbian learning, the principle that neurons that fire together wire together.
Right.
Every time you review that stack, you are thickening the myelin sheath around those specific neural pathways, making the new patterns of thought faster and more permanent.
And, of course, do not forget to continue seeding the bedtime question tonight.
Never skip the bedtime question.
Now, if today's work feels heavy, that is because it is. You are doing serious psychological lifting. But tomorrow, day 7, is designed to be a light and easy day.
Oh, def.
It's focused entirely on consolidation. You will be setting your long-term code and transitioning smoothly right into the next law and module. You've done the heavy demolition and construction this week. Tomorrow is just about organizing the final product.
It gives your nervous system a much-needed chance to stabilize.
As we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to explore on your own. We've spent a lot of time discussing how specific, deep-seated fears bypass our logic and make us vulnerable to manipulation.
Right.
If you now know exactly which specific fear erodes your critical thinking, say it's the fear of social rejection or looking foolish, what would happen if you actively sought out minor controlled exposures to that fear?
That is essentially self-directed exposure therapy.
Exactly. If your fear is social ostracization, what if you intentionally stated a mild, unpopular opinion in a relatively safe group setting?
Just to test the waters.
Right. Just to prove to your own nervous system that the world doesn't end and you don't actually die if someone disagrees with you. By giving yourself controlled microdoses of the very thing that scares you, could you effectively vaccinate your own mind against future manipulation?
I love that. You would be actively training the prefrontal cortex to maintain control even when the amygdala detects a threat. You are building cognitive immunity.
And when you build that immunity, that psychological blind spot we started with, the one where your brain paints over the void to keep you comfortable.
You stop letting it dictate your reality.
Exactly. You finally force yourself to see the whole unedited picture. So dive into the workbook, be completely honest with yourself, and we will see you tomorrow for day 7.